mechanical dog that can sniff out whether someone's over the age of 12. And if it does, it's going to attack them. It's going to be called attack dog, right? And it's going to be a little tiny dog like this, a little dachshund like this. And it's going to have springs so it can fly and get the nose every time. I'm going to put that same thing they put on the stealth bombs, only instead of looking for a window, it's going to have a picture of a big schnauz on it. And any time it finds one, it's going to go psh, like this. And then it's going to wait, and it can detect whenever you're falling asleep. And then it'll go, wake you back up. This is going to be, and it's only allowed to be purchased by grandparents. No one else. And then you can give it to your children. That's a way of doing it. See, my mother has a theory with kids that she can spoil them and do whatever she wants to them. Because, after all, she figures... I want you to know, by the way, I am the single most conservative person in my family. I'm the one with the least amount of flexibility in behavior. Think about it. It's a scary thought. People wonder, well, how could you learn to do all this outrageous stuff? Hey, I was the one. I'm the one toned down. Right? Whenever I get truly angry at someone, I bring my relatives over for dinner. That's right. Break out the dueling banjos. It's when they show up with their pigs and stuff, you know. They never go anywhere without their pigs, right? They bring everything with them. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to realize that inside that thunderbolt state, you have to find the times when you've been most effective at changing somebody's life, at really affecting someone. No matter who it is, you have to find the moments and step inside it. You have to find the points where you are having the most fun. You know, I mean, you could be dancing with abandonment on the dance floor and turned around and looked at somebody, and you knew inside of them they were going, no, don't ask me, don't ask me. You know, I've seen people do that. They dance around and then they stop and they look at somebody over there, come and dance with me. They always pick the person who wants to dance the least, right? And they drag them out there, and then 2 seconds later they're dancing with abandonment because they forget themselves. You want to find the times, and it doesn't matter because you're going to take all of these and you're going to make them bigger than life and huge inside them. See what you saw at the time and then start sticking in other ones. Now, it'd be the job of those of you to load this person up, then sit back about 10 or 15 feet, and I want the person who's got all this stuff up to make for yourself an anchor, something where, use a phrase, something like, now, let's begin. Something that you can always use when you walk up on a stage, that horn sequence, something that'll tell you, now it's time to begin. And then I want you to just turn and I want you to look at one, not more than one, just one of the people and find out if you can see physical changes in them. Because when you open your eyes and look at them, you should be able to see that you affect them totally. See, it's always my test in the beginning as to whether I'm in a state where I'm ready to start. I look out at the audience, and if I can look at somebody and generate an internal state and notice that it affects them, which it does, which it's supposed to, see? That old thing in Gestalt therapy about how humans can't affect one another, that's furniture, man. You know, if it's chairs that don't respond. Human beings respond. When you look at a human being and they know you're looking at them and they know you're going to pick on them, and they know you're going to change them without a doubt, internally their state is going to change. And the more you change your state, the more they'll change theirs. Same thing is true. If you look at a woman, guys, and she doesn't change, then do something about yourself, you know, because you're supposed to be able to affect them. When you look at them, if nothing else, you can always use this one. Just let your lower lip fill with blood. Say, all you have to do is think the thoughts. It affects the people. See, it's just like your congruency in your voice. If you're not thinking about something excitement, and you don't have to make a big picture of it and dwell on it, you just go, pull it up. And when you say excitement, it'll sound that way. Otherwise, it'll be excitement. Now, I want you all to go out and have a thrilling time. Never heard, I hear this from people. I always want to go, ch-ch-ch. It's what I hear in my head. You know, I went to, actually, I didn't go. I just happened to be there. I was staying in the hotel seeing a client, and there was an NLP conference there. I saw the sign. How could I resist, you know? And, you know, I knew it had to be a good one because when I walked up, the person at the door had no idea who I was. They said, are you interested in NLP? And I said, not really. I said, as a matter of fact, I'm becoming somewhat confused about what the letters stand for. And the guy went, neuro, as in your neurology. Linguistic, as in, and I love this gesture, language. And I said, and programming? And he said, like programming a computer. And I said, it sounds like fucking brainwashing to me. And he said, oh, no, it's not. And I said, it's not, huh? So anyway, while he was talking, I said, can I just peek for a minute and see if I'm interested? And the guys stepped aside because there were two doors open. And here was somebody up on the stage, which, number one, I've never seen, which shows you how interested they are in neurolinguistic programming, right? I don't know about you. When I wanted to learn hypnosis, I went to the best. I didn't fool around. You know, I think you guys kind of have the same attitude. I made it up. How can I be wrong? I have people who have the audacity to say, well, yeah, what Bandler does isn't really NLP anymore, right? Okay, all right, I'll make up a new word if you guys don't want it. But, you know, the thing is, they go, back in the old days, he used to do the real neurolinguistic programming. Now, look, my word, my field, right? You know, you want to make up your own shit, get your own field, okay? There's plenty of words around, you know, it's not like there's a shortage of them. You know, I get tired of that when I start making up more. They're free. There is an infinite amount of language. Well, this guy on the stage said, now, he tells these people, and because I didn't catch the beginning, and so maybe there was something more exciting there. I doubt it. The guy said, when you use neurolinguistic programming with your clients, you can make the therapeutic process exciting. And I was in the back of the room. There was only a few thousand people there. And I yell out, I said, I can, but you can't, right? And I could hear inside the internal dialogue of various people in the room, oh, shit. They recognize the voice. And this guy yells off of the stage, who the fuck do you think you are? And I said, your worst nightmare. And strutted right down the aisle. And I said, who the hell are you? And somebody says, she goes, I'm Dr. Diddle. I said, did you make that up or did your mother do that? Right? And then I can hear on the sides of the aisles as I walk down, holy Christ, Jesus God, oh God. It sounded like they all suddenly, Tourette's was live everywhere. You know, holy Christ, fuck, Jesus, yes, holy, you know. And then as I turn around and look, there are those that are beaming and smiling. Like, well, maybe this isn't going to be as boring as I thought it was. And I walk up, you know, and I would just go right up the steps onto the stage, right? And I said, let me introduce myself. I said, my name's Bandler, Richard Bandler. Does it ring a bell? And the guy's like this. And so I went like that and said, glad to meet you. And he went for it. There it was, and I told him to go inside and stay there and not to come out until he learned to behave himself properly. That you don't tell people to become excited about my work, right? I said, if somebody's going to become excited, I said, if you want to come back out, I want you to get excited and trained. Because it's too... Hey, what the hell is this fucking guy? I don't care if it's an APA convention. You know, they have no right to do this. They'd go get their own toys. They have their DSMO books and all that stuff. You know, they have all those great techniques like laying on a couch and listening to somebody for 5 years. There's a good one, huh? And my favorite one is the Rorschach one. Show them bladdered things and tell them to hallucinate. What is this like? Right, you know. And, of course, every one of them looked like a pussy to me, you know. What does this look like? It looks like pussy. What does this look like? It looks like more pussy. You know. I did. I took the class on Rorschach tests, right? And then I got kicked out of it, too. The guy said, how about insects? Does it remind you of any insects? And I said, it doesn't. Looked at him. See, I mean, if I'm going to hallucinate, I'm at least going to hallucinate something fun, you know? I'm not going to hallucinate something, deep dark tunnel. No, I don't think so. Well, maybe if you interpret it a little bit and twist it. Now, the thing is to remember, powerful states are not where you go to have anger. They're where you go to have fun. See, I didn't go up there because I was mad. I went up there because I was bored. I was finished, right? I looked over. There was nobody in the bar to play with. There was a guy playing piano out of tune and out of rhythm. Moon River, wider than a mile. And I went, this is hell, and it's not even frozen yet. Right? And then I saw the sign. It called out to me. It went, Richard, Richard, come fuck with these people. They need you. And I saw the big APA. And then I saw neuro-linguistic programming. And I thought, that's like black and white, man. Time to have some fun. So I told him to try in vain, when he came out of the altered state he was in, to be able to speak. Great presupposition, isn't it? I always use it with my clients. I tell them to try in vain to go back to the way they were. It's one of the most powerful, complex meanings that you can utter, because it stacks every presupposition towards failing. When you tell somebody to try in vain, then they're never going to be able to. Tell them to try in vain to be the way they were. And you watch them. They actually struggle. They go, try and get the fear back. You know, you get the phobics. They go, you go, well, I got the picture of the elevator. I just can't get afraid. And they'll even do things like, oh, give me a minute. Give me a minute. And I'm always shocked they're even trying at all. They've been trying their whole life not to do this. And they really work at it. They go, no, wait a minute. I can do this. Right? It's the one thing they've mastered in life. And here I fucked it up for them, you know. They're like, you know. And I go, well, I even had one, a height phobic one. And this really cracked me up. This guy was so determined. He went in and he went up to like the sixth story of this hotel and hung off the balcony. He came back down and he said, well, I'm not afraid. And I said, well, I thought you told me you were a phobic. And he goes, well I am. And I went, you were. And he went, well, let me try again. And he went up and he went up the stairs. There are 300 people in this audience. And he goes way up to the high. And it's one of these atrium type places. And we're actually in the atrium. This guy is up. All you can see is like a dot hanging up there, right, like this, and he's up there, and he came down, and he said, I mean, like, disappointed, and he goes, I can't find the fear today. He said, maybe it's tired. Oh, you only get to be so afraid each day, you know, and I said, maybe it's broken, permanently. Now, I'll also tell you something about this. Of all the height phobias I've had, this one worried me the most. This guy was an airline pilot. Think about it. And because when I asked him what he did, and he told me he was an airline pilot, I went, wait a minute. If you're an airline pilot, and he goes, well, he says, the height phobia doesn't work if you get just high enough. And I said, who takes off the plane? And he said, oh, I'll usually let the co-pilot do that. And I thought, where did this guy get a pilot's license from? The drugstore? Right? And I, you know, so I asked, I said, what airlines do you work for, you know? And just because I wasn't flying, because obviously they don't check their pilots out real good. You know, they're paying off insurance on this guy to go to the psychiatrist for a height phobia. Right? I want you to think about the guy doing, oh, height phobia, sure, we'll do that. No, not a thought in the world, but fortunately that airline isn't around anymore. Can't imagine why. It's Piedmont Airlines. You guys remember that one? That was the one where the planes kept crashing all the time on the East Coast back here. I know I crashed. I actually crashed in one of their planes. I came out of Binghamton, New York, landed in White Plains, wing first. Right. Well, it was a bit of a snowstorm, and the plane kind of froze up. The pilot came down. The plane spun donuts down the runway. It's one of these little coffins with 18 people in it, you know. Little commuter thing. Things spun down there, you know. We run out of the plane and we go inside. It's still snowing. And I mean, I've seen fear in my life, but the looks on these people's faces was as scared as you can get. And the pilot comes in and says, we have de-iced the plane. You can reboard now. I don't think so. I mean, I'm a pretty ballsy guy, but I wasn't getting back on this plane, let me tell you. I looked at this guy and I said, I, for one, would like my luggage. And the guy said, well, the luggage doesn't come off till New York. And I said, let me put it this way. If you don't get my luggage off the plane, I will take your skin off your body. And the guy said, you and what army? And I thought, me and this army. because every one of them was nodding yes. Well, are you more afraid of going and getting your luggage, or are you more afraid of getting back in the plane that just hit wing first and spun donuts down the free? I mean, I want to tell you the look of it, because he looked up at them and they were walking at him, and it looked like one of those horror movies, The Village of the Damned, right? They knew at that moment how to throw a thunderbolt. There wasn't any question in their mind about whether they were getting their luggage. They had eyes open, and you could watch him, everyone he looked at, the fear striking him. And he looked back at me, and I smiled and said, "Just ain't your fucking day, is it?" And he said, "I think we'll get the luggage off the plane." We rented a station wagon, by the way, all of us, piled the luggage on the top and drove through a snowstorm to New York. They let me drive. Now, I know a few of you have driven with me, and you'll realize that I don't drive less than warp factor 6, right? Because I believe if you slow down, the police will catch you. That's my theory of driving. I also have a theory: stoplights are for people without sensory acuity, and so are one-way streets. Well, see, I grew up in San Francisco, and driving is done there very differently. No one pays attention to any of the rules at all. None whatsoever. Plus, it's very steep hills, and we have these things called tourists, right? And the tourists haven't got it down at all. They drive up to the top of the hill, and they stop. Then they can't see over the hood of the car, right? Then they go to take the brake off to put it on the gas, and they roll down backwards, right? So you have to learn to go like this. Because, you see, when you look to see if the light is red, it's in the rearview mirror. We all know this. Now, this is the attitude I want you to develop. The attitude is that with what you're doing here, you are, in fact, invincible. Because you have to have that attitude. When you start to do something, and somebody makes a remark or does something that's going to throw your sequence off, you need to go in and grab your thunderbolt and go, and then just look back. You do it twice, they'll never speak again until spoken to. Because the look that you're going to give them has got to have every kind of power. When you start and you look at the back of the audiences, you capture their attention. And you do that because your internal state is dynamic. And because when they look at you, they know you're going to enjoy it if they fuck with you. It's just that simple. When you find all the internal power in you, when I look at people, when they make a remark, they go, oh, you can watch them, they go, oh, and you just keep letting them wince, right? And then you go back, right? And then they, because then they have to do this and look up. Is he still out there? Right. And then as soon as they start to look up, your peripheral vision catches it, and you look back and you go, you throw another one, right? And then go on. After you do this several times, you have control of your audience, know how it big it is, because everybody else knows it at the unconscious level. Their unconscious goes, look at that, fucks with assholes. Unconscious goes, okay, take that as a rule. Now, this allows you to be able, when you go through material, to go right through it in sequence. Because remember the chains we were doing? What if somebody sticks something in the middle of the chain? Right? Then it ends up screwing it up. Then people go, hesitation to frustration, to wanton motivation, you know, to total distraction. You know, you don't want those extra things in there. There are times where you can let audiences do it. But when you run through a loop, oh, let's say 5 times, like I just have, it installs it in the audience. And in order for them to go do the exercise, you have to put it there. Because if you don't put it there, if you don't install the strategy, how could they learn easily? Then they'd have to do it the hard way, have a whole new childhood. Seems like a lot of effort, doesn't it? There is a thing called rebirthing, however, where they do that. I don't know if you guys have heard about this one, but it takes the cake, definitely. They take people and they come for 2 hours a week. They put them in a fetal position and shove them through a tube. The tube's in sections. It's all wound around, right? I found out about it because across the street from my office, there was a couple and they were in a fight. And the guy turned to the woman and said, look, give me some slack. Give me some slack. I've been stuck in the birth control canal for 2 weeks. And, you know, and I thought, so I said, excuse me, sir, I don't mean to intrude, but what the hell do you mean? And then he took me back inside the building, and it used to be the old Dianetics place. They're losing a lot of customers recently. I don't know why. Must have something to do with the way people are acting about cults. I don't know what it is, because they don't let you in those places to find out what goes on. I figure any place where they lock the doors and do things on an ongoing basis, we should put cameras inside of, you know, especially when it has to do with, come on inside, we don't program your mind, program your mind, program your mind. Here, have some incense. That'll be 25 cents. That's the one that pissed me off. They come up cheerful and give you something and then ask for money. Mm-mm. You want to sell me something, you ask for the money first. Because you know what people did? They go, well, if it costs money, then they give it back. Not me. I'd go, hey, so the incense are free, right? Take them all. Go, here's 25 cents. Go make a phone call. Call home. Try a new life. Then I'd rip the wig off. You know those people, they shave their heads and then they wear wigs to collect money? Did you know that? In the airports when they come up to you? Reach up, go like this, because they're cheap wigs. They come right off most of the time. No, they do. They go down to the Goodwill and get all the cheap wigs. You can tell just by looking. And then if you take their wig and then you put the incense they have in it, then grab all the books that they have and run off singing, you know, they won't chase you. They'll say to themselves, now, why would you shave your head and wear a wig?